What if tomorrow morning arrived in complete silence? No robins greeting the dawn, no bees humming through gardens, no flutter of wings against the sky? This wasn't a dystopian fantasy when Rachel Carson posed this question in 1962. It was already happening. Across American towns, spring mornings had grown eerily quiet. Birds that once filled the air with song were vanishing, trembling with mysterious ailments, or lying dead beneath trees. The culprit wasn't a natural plague or enemy sabotage. We had done this to ourselves through an invisible rain of chemicals we believed would make life better. Carson's Silent Spring detonated like a bomb in American consciousness. The chemical industry spent $250,000 trying to silence her, launching vicious personal attacks even as she privately battled the breast cancer that would kill her within 2 years. Yet her message couldn't be suppressed. President Kennedy ordered investigations. The public demanded answers. And from this single book emerged the modern environmental movement and eventually the Environmental Protection Agency. Carson showed us something terrifying. Our war on nature was a war on ourselves. For billions of years, life evolved in balance with its environment. Then World War II brought synthetic pesticides, entirely new molecules against which living things had no evolutionary defenses. The promise seemed miraculous. Spray DDT and mosquitoes vanish. Apply herbicides and weeds disappear. By the 1950s, America produced 500 new chemical compounds annually, spraying them everywhere, on crops, forests, roadsides, suburban lawns, even inside homes. But we ignored a fundamental truth. Nature doesn't work in straight lines. DDT sprayed on elm trees soaked into fallen leaves. Earthworms consumed them, concentrating the poison. Robins ate the earthworms. Just 11 could deliver a lethal dose. The robins died by thousands. The elms, they died anyway. We had traded a living world for nothing. Synthetic chemicals now inhabit every human body, in fatty tissues, liver, reproductive organs, breast milk, and unborn children. This chemical burden didn't exist in our grandparents' generation. These aren't negligible amounts. Agricultural workers stored 17 parts per million of DDT, while factory workers carried up to 648 parts per million, levels causing measurable organ damage. Even unexposed people averaged 5 to 7 parts per million, accumulating more each year. These chemicals actively harm us. DDT attacks the nervous system and liver. Dieldrin, 5 times more toxic than DDT when swallowed, 40 times more through skin, causes violent convulsions lasting months. Organic phosphates, developed from Nazi nerve gas research, destroy enzymes regulating nerve signals. British scientists who deliberately exposed themselves reported extreme fatigue, aching limbs, and spasms of extreme nervous tension, persisting over a year. The liver suffers most severely. As our detoxification center, it processes every poison while managing metabolism, protein synthesis, and hormone regulation. The sharp rise in hepatitis and cirrhosis since the 1950s tracks precisely with widespread pesticide use. Water connects everything. What we spray on land inevitably reaches rivers, lakes, and underground aquifers. In Colorado, chemicals from a military arsenal traveled through groundwater for miles, poisoning wells. Most disturbing, scientists found 2,4-D weed killer despite it never being manufactured there. It had formed spontaneously when other chemicals mixed. California's Clear Lake reveals how pesticides infiltrate ecosystems. Authorities applied DDT at 1 part per 70 million to control nets. Western grebes began dying with tissue concentrations of 1,600 parts per million. The chemical had concentrated through the food chain. Plankton absorbed it, small fish ate plankton, larger fish ate smaller fish, and birds ate fish. At each step, the poison intensified. New Brunswick's Miramichi River tells an even grimmer story. For millennia, salmon returned to spawn in its waters. Then came forest spraying for spruce budworm. Within 2 days of DDT application, dead fish lined the banks. Not a single young salmon survived. The stream's insect life, the salmon's food base, was destroyed. The river that had sustained communities for thousands of years became a graveyard. We see a weed-choked roadside and think only of tidiness. We see sagebrush on western rangelands and imagine better grazing. We see insects on crops and reach for poison. What we fail to see is the intricate web connecting all these elements, a web millions of years in the making that we're shredding with breathtaking speed. Consider the sagebrush lands of the American West. The sage evolved perfectly for this harsh environment, and alongside it evolved the pronghorned antelope and sage grouse, species so adapted they cannot survive without it. The sage provides year-round shelter for grouse and critical winter forage for antelope when snow covers everything else. Yet government agencies enthusiastically promoted sage eradication, spraying millions of acres to improve grazing. Justice William O. Douglas witnessed the aftermath in Wyoming's Bridger National Forest, where 10,000 acres once supported moose, beaver, and trout. The spray killed not just sage, but the willows along streams. The beaver dam collapsed. 5-pound trout disappeared from what became a bare, hot stream bed. Roadside vegetation faces similar assault. Yet these hedgerows provide food and shelter for birds and habitat for wild bees and pollinators on which agriculture depends. Without them, plants that hold soil and enrich it with nitrogen die, triggering cascading ecological consequences. We face a choice: quick chemical fixes that breed resistance and contamination, or patient ecological solutions. Scientist Edward Nippling conquered the screwworm fly, a livestock devastator, by sterilizing males with radiation. Released to mate with wild females, they produced no offspring. Testing on Curaçao Island in 1954 rendered every egg mass infertile within 7 weeks, complete eradication without poison. Florida producers scaled the method across the Southeast, churning out 50 million sterilized flies weekly. By 1959, after releasing 3.5 billion flies, the screwworm was eliminated. Other biological controls prove equally powerful. Bacillus thuringiensis targets only specific insects. Since 1888, when California imported Australian beetles to rescue citrus crops, about 100 beneficial species have been established in America. California's $4 million investment returned $100 million in benefits. These approaches share one insight. We're dealing with living populations in complex ecological relationships. Only by understanding and working with natural forces can we achieve lasting solutions. Carson died of cancer in 1964, just 2 years after Silent Spring appeared. But her legacy endures in every environmental protection law, every organic farm, every decision to choose ecological wisdom over chemical convenience. She taught us that we're not separate from nature, but woven into it, that poisons released into the environment inevitably return to us. Her question remains urgent. Will we continue down the path of chemical dependence, accepting contaminated bodies and silent springs as the price of convenience? Or will we choose the harder but wiser path of working with natural systems? Every choice matters. What we spray on our lawns, what food we buy, what policies we support. The chemicals in our bodies didn't appear by accident. We can make different choices. The spring doesn't have to stay silent. But reclaiming the song requires recognizing Carson's truth. In nature, nothing exists alone. When we poison the earth, we poison ourselves. When we heal the earth, we heal ourselves.